Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Special Edition, a weekly look at the issues in the news and the personalities shaping the stories. Special Edition is a production of Intercom Communications.
Welcome to Special Edition. I'm Paula Degnan. Coming up this week, if you haven't gotten your flu shot yet, we're going to find out why you should get it sooner than later. We're also going to find out about children's poverty in the state, the latest from the Annie E. Casey Foundation. The Luzerne-Lackawanna County Medical Societies are having a health fair and a fun Halloween run. But first, let's introduce you to Julie Walker. She is the Executive Director of the Peyton Walker Foundation and Peyton's mom. Julie is going to tell us all about the foundation and sudden cardiac awareness. There's a screening coming up locally. Julie will have the details. Give us an introduction to the Peyton Walker Foundation.
Peyton was a sophomore at King's College, studying to be a physician assistant, and tragically, my husband and I received the phone call on a beautiful fall morning, November 2nd, 2013, from King's College, telling us that our daughter had just been taken by ambulance to the hospital. And, of course, we were just absolutely spun. We had no idea what was happening. We lost Peyton that day to sudden cardiac arrest without warning, did not get to say goodbye. So our world was just completely turned upside down. You know, Peyton wanted to work in healthcare, so we really tried to figure out a way to fulfill her desire. The shirt she was wearing the day she passed away said, "What we do for ourselves dies with us. What we do for others and the world remains and is immortal." So we thought, wow, this is obviously Peyton's mission. This is her message to us, to, you know, to take this loss and do something with it. So we established the Peyton Walker Foundation to save other families from the tragic heartache of losing a child to sudden cardiac arrest. And we three things we do, heart screening. So we go out. We've screened over 2,500 kids to find hidden heart issues that can lead to sudden cardiac arrest, because physicals do not include a comprehensive heart screening, and those are the issues that can lead to this and cause sudden death. We also donate AEDs, which are defibrillators, needed to save someone who's in cardiac arrest. It delivers that shock and restarts the heart. And then we also go out and provide CPR and AED training all throughout the community. So in addition to the 100-plus AEDs that we've donated, we have trained well over 100,000 people on how to do CPR and how to use an AED. So that's the big picture of what Peyton Walker Foundation is all about.
And condolences, of course, to you and your family. But you're never prepared for these things. Was there was nothing, there was no indication? Because when we hear about this sudden cardiac happening, the sudden cardiac awareness month that we are now in the midst of, so many people have no clue, Julie, that this right. is even an option. Do people tell you that?
Absolutely. And our story is a lot different than a lot of other people. I was diagnosed with a heart condition called hypertrophic cardiomyopathy when I was in my late 20s. Once they found it in me, they started screening my kids, and we found it in Peyton when she was in fifth grade. It had started to develop. So we have a different angle. We actually knew she had this heart condition. She was on medication. She was under the care of a cardiologist. She had restricted activities. She was not allowed to compete in competitive sports. And this still happened to an educated family and a kid that was on medication. It still happened. So we take a step back and think, oh, my gosh, we had all the information. We had the tools at our fingertips. This still happened. What about the families that don't even know their kids are walking around with this undiagnosed heart condition? So that's why we have really worked relentlessly to educate parents, because you see too many headlines of kids who are dropping over dead on the football field, kids who go to sleep at night and never wake up. It's just happening all too often and becoming more and more prevalent. So we say there's 1 hour every day, every hour every day we lose a kid to sudden cardiac arrest. So it is very prevalent, sadly.
Have you found in meeting parents and talking to other medical professionals about this that there is an age group? Because you're right, we do hear these things usually about student athletes. Now, Peyton was already in college. We've heard of this happening to students in high school. Is there an age group that they're particularly looking at?
Well, we when we do our heart screenings, we typically look at kids 12 to 19 years old. That seems to be the greatest incident of cardiac arrest, but it's indiscriminate. It doesn't choose athletes over non-athletes, so it happens across the board equally to athletes and non-athletes. Some younger children can, die suddenly, same thing. But it seems to be that this age group, the 12 to 19-year-old, is when we're going to see the peak incidence of sudden cardiac arrest episodes. So that's why we target that particular age group.
When you're talking about increasing awareness, and again, you're talking to people who are saying, well, there's no symptoms. I don't, as you said in your case, I don't have any precursors to any of this. What are you telling people?
Well, educating parents is so important. Have discussions with your kids. All too often, kids are having symptoms and they're ignoring them because they think it's normal. They've had them; they may have been having these symptoms for years, and they just think it's normal, so they dismiss it. So talk to your kids. Ask them: are they having chest pain or pressure, dizziness, shortness of breath? Are they feeling palpitations or a racing heart rate? Any of these things are abnormal. But the number one red flag is if a child passes out, especially after exercise. If a child passes out, that really could indicate a very serious underlying heart condition. And it harkens back to, we take comfort in, well, my child has had a sports physical or my child has had a well-child physical, so everything's okay. But unfortunately, during those physicals, their hearts are not really being checked for underlying electrical problems that can lead to these cardiac deaths. So that's really why we want to educate parents. Talk to your kids about signs and symptoms, and then talk to your pediatricians or your primary care doctors and ask, can I please get a baseline electrocardiogram for my child? And that's the conversation that really needs to take place then.
Do you think that maybe a lot of times, too, it comes down to, well, I can't afford it. I don't want to deal with it. That can't happen to me. Because, again, dealing with especially students in college at that age group where you're just starting out, wow, nothing can happen to me. Of course, this is, as you said earlier, this is all just something that I'm winded because, or I'm lightheaded because. Mm-hmm. So that's a tough one.
It really is, and that's, people want to kind of just negate any possibilities. Well, I'm fine. I just got a little dehydrated, or I'm tired, or, they want to just find every reason they can to dismiss these symptoms, but it is really important to pay attention to them and have the conversation with your doctors and just, get the baseline EKG done so that you know there's nothing going on, and then have that repeated every 2 years so you can see if there's any change. So you might get an EKG done or electrocardiogram done when the kids are 12, but then it should be done at 14 because things can develop and change in the hearts of everyone.
Along those lines, you mentioned the defibrillators. And first of all, you're actually located in, you're not in, even though your daughter went to King's College, you're not here in Northeast Pennsylvania. Where are you located?
So we're in the Harrisburg area, but we are working, we'll work with other outside agencies to help get AEDs. In fact, we worked with a group up in the Wilkes-Barre, Scranton area, and we were able to donate an AED to Camp Orchard Hills. So that AED is now available. And we want to work. I mean, Peyton chose King's College for a reason, and the NEPA area is very near and dear to our hearts. I mean, the people have been a tremendous source of support for our family. throughout this incredibly difficult journey. So we really want to pay it forward.
We're talking about those, and it was back in June that you actually made the donation. What made you decide that that was where it needed to go? Do people contact you in order to find out more about these things? And we're going to talk about a screening clinic that you also have coming up in the very near future as well. But if someone is, you know, obviously it's a camp. So normally you would think of a business, a school. How do people find out about them?
Well, this one, this donation in particular was kind of unique. One of our former neighbors where we live now works for Henningsen Cold Storage up in the Scranton area. He reached out to us and said, our company wants to donate an AED in this area. And I said, great, you know, why don't you ask your employees and get their feedback and input and see where an AED is needed. So they identified Camp Orchard Hills. We were thrilled to work with Henningsen Cold Storage, get the donation, and get the AED delivered. So it's making sure, and we'd really want to drive this point home too, making sure there are AEDs available where your kids play and practice sports is absolutely critical. Anywhere that there are kids gathering, it's so important, and people in general, not just children, but sudden cardiac arrest takes 450,000 lives a year in the United States. So we need to get AEDs out there and make them more available. But when you look at the statistics, sudden cardiac arrest is the leading cause of death on school campuses and the number one killer of student athletes. So we've got to make sure we've got AEDs available for these kids and give them a chance, because survival rate is less than 10% for cardiac arrest.
And what about training? Because, again, is there a difference, too, in AEDs for in an area where there would be predominantly children? See, I think a lot of times people hear all this and say, whoa, that's just too much responsibility for me.
Well, the good news is AEDs will talk you through the rescue. So you can't misuse it, and that's a misnomer, too. People say, oh, you know, I don't want to have an AED and take on that responsibility and liability because somebody will take it off the wall and use it to shock somebody. An AED will not issue a shock to someone who does not need it. So we just became aware of our first documented save. Of the 100-plus AEDs that we've put out into the community, we had a save with one of our AEDs this July at a baseball game nearby. And the person that was involved in the rescue, he said, you know what, having that AED, he said, at that point I was in total panic mode. When you're trying to save someone's life, he said, thank goodness that AED talks you through in a very calm manner. And it tells you, you know, press, press, press. So it keeps you going on the CPR chest compressions, and it tells you exactly what to do step by step. So we encourage people to just learn CPR. You don't necessarily need to become certified, but at least learn how to do it. And, you know, if you have a chance to see how an AED, what it looks like and how it's used, take 5 or 10 minutes and learn those important life-saving skills.
Now, you're coming to visit, are you?
We are. This is a really, really special partnership for us. Coming back up to King's College, working with our friends at King's and the phenomenal medical team at Geisinger to deliver a heart screening to the residents in the Wilkes-Barre area, it's just really coming full circle for us. It's just our way of saying, you know, thank you. Peyton was here, and we want to make sure that her legacy continues to live on. So we're hosting this heart screening at King's on the Square in October the 5th. It is absolutely free of charge. There is no registration fee. There's no insurance information exchanged. There's no catch. And people are always skeptical. You know, there's got to be a catch. There really isn't. We work hard with our partners and so that we can provide these services free of charge. So kids will come in. We'll check, give them an electrocardiogram free of charge. We'll listen for heart murmurs. We'll check their vitals. If anything comes back a little suspicious or abnormal, or there's some family history that we want to investigate a little bit further, we will also provide an echocardiogram, which is an ultrasound of the heart on the spot that day, again, free of charge. There's no cost to participate in this screening. Last year, we screened over 100 kids. We had, I believe, 2 or 3 significant findings that required some additional follow-up testing. So you just, you know, kids look and seem healthy, but you never know what hidden heart issues lie underneath.
Now, where and when is this going to be happening? And in just in case people are driving or out walking and need to get the information, how can they find out more?
So it's Saturday, October 5th at King's College from 9 until 2 o'clock. And pre-registration is required. So you have to go to peytonwalker.org. That's PeytonWalker.org, peytonwalker.org. You'll register, and then you'll print out a medical questionnaire that you've got to bring with you. We will have additional copies of that questionnaire available on site if people are not able to access a printer. But we definitely need you to pre-register. We do have limited numbers available, so we can try to accommodate everyone. And again, free of charge. The whole process from start to finish should take about an hour. If your child requires an echocardiogram, it may be another 30 or 45 minutes of time for you. But it is time and effort well spent, for sure. And we'll also, the kids will also learn during the heart screening process, they'll have the opportunity to learn CPR and how to use an AED. So it's a great educational opportunity for families as well.
That is amazing. Would you ever have thought, Julie, that you would be in this position where here you are giving this amazing opportunity? I mean, everything happens for a reason.
Well, you know, Peyton, she was the quintessential middle child and was a master manipulator of making everyone else do her hard work. So that's what I say. Well, okay, here we are doing this work on Peyton's behalf. But every day I'm so incredibly proud of the work that we're able to accomplish. And I'm so grateful. I mean, we lost a child, but we have truly gained a village. And we are so grateful for everyone who has stepped up and said, how can we help? How can we carry out this mission? And how can we make sure that Peyton's legacy lives on and is meaningful? So, you know, this has totally been an effort of a village. And, you know, through tragedy comes, there are some rays of sunshine at the end. And we know we have saved kids. There's kids that have been sent for surgery. There's kids that are on continued medication and, you know, treatment for heart conditions that we have found. And we know we've saved a life with an AED that we've donated. So, you know, it is gratifying. It's a double-edged sword for sure. But we're really, really proud of the work we're doing.
Our thanks again to Julie Walker with the Peyton Walker Foundation for giving us all the details. And if you'd like to find out more, you can go to their website, peytonwalker.org. You can find out more about the foundation as well as the upcoming screening at King's College in Wilkes-Barre on October 4th. Now don't go away. More special edition to come. Welcome back to Special Edition. Tenye Verkaitis, the executive director of the Luzerne and Lackawanna County Medical Societies, has a wonderful event that is coming up in October. It's their health fair. They're doing something a little bit different this year, and you don't have to worry about winning a 5K. You might want to be concerned, though, about what you wear in order to take part. She'll explain. Tenye, you're here again, and that means that we're going to get healthy. Woo!
We're going to try.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
The folks from the Lackawanna Luzerne County Medical Societies have been busy, 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 going all summer long.
Yep.
But you're not done yet.
Not quite. I think we can say this might be our last big event of the season. At least I hope I don't get any surprises.
Well, if you do, you're behind it.
Exactly.
What's coming up?
We have our Boo Run 5K and Health Fair. It is our first annual. It will be happening at Wilkes University's Henry Student Center on October 19th.
Oh, let me do it. A Boo Run.
Exactly.
There we go. Now everybody knows it's for Halloween. So what's the Halloween theme?
Well, we want everyone to come in costume for the run walk. We think that'll be lots of fun. We're also going to have trick-or-treating at the health fair for the kids, and then there'll be a costume competition for adults and children.
And when we're talking about this walk run?
Yes.
It's a 5K.
Yes, it is.
Where's it going?
It actually is going to head out from the Student Center. We'll go through campus a little bit. We'll walk through downtown Wilkes-Barre and then come back up along River Road and end at the Campus Center.
And if people are maybe not up to the the whole 5K, because are you focusing on the run?
We're calling it a run walk for starters. So there is no prize for being the fastest person there. What we want to see is your talent and your creativity in your Halloween costumes. And if you don't want to run, just come for the health fair.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
Yeah.
All right. I might be able to handle that. Tell us about the health fair then. What time does that start?
The health fair is going to start at 9:30. At that point, kids can come and trick or treat in costume. We won't actually do the costume competition until later, but we'll have different organizations sharing their services, also offer some screenings. And the students from the Generation RX program, they're part of the pharmacy program at Wilkes, will be there talking about Narcan and some other activities and doing trainings.
No, they just had the recent Narcan distribution,
mm-hmm.
and people are learning more about that. If people want to come to the event, can
yes.
they just show up? Do they have to register? Is there a cost?
So for the run, there is a cost. It is $25. You can sign up at runsignup.com. Just search Boo Run 5K and Health Fair.
That's B-O-O.
B-O-O, yes. And then for the health fair, you don't have to sign up, though you can sign up at runsignup. But we would just like you to come out. If you sign up, then of course it helps us figure out how much candy we really need to have.
healthy candy,
yes. No sugar, I'm sure. But otherwise, just come on out for the health fair and have a good time.
It is true that both medical societies, both Luzerne and Lackawanna counties, get together. They do so many things. As I said, you were busy over the summer.
Yes.
Between Public Square and between the courthouse in Scranton and doing all those things. Do you foresee anything new coming up in the future that you're going to be concentrating on?
As of now, I haven't really planned anything. I am considering a 5K for the health fair that we do in Scranton. And I know that we are planning some other community projects. I actually have a meeting as soon as I leave here to talk to someone about some of these things. But really, just these. This, I don't think I mentioned before, the 5K is replacing our drug take back that we've normally done at the courthouse. We'll still probably do the take back in April. Maybe we'll turn that into something fun as well. But this year, you can bring, or for October anyway, your drugs to the Henry Student Center as well, and the Sheriff's Department will take them and dispose of them for you.
And in talking about that, just the whole idea of the drug take-back, the word's out,
mm-hmm.
and it was folks like you who really had a big push in order to get the word out about how to go about it. Are you finding that people are becoming more accustomed to getting rid of their unwanted drugs?
I can definitely say that our take-backs had a decrease in the number of participants. And it's not so much that I think that people have necessarily gotten the word, but maybe our audience has gotten the word. But I also think that people are aware of the fact that they can take drugs to their local pharmacy, to police departments, to the courthouse, and there's boxes there. There's still a whole demographic of folks, I'm sure, that haven't gotten this information. And some of the things we plan to work on next year is how do we message those folks and get out in the community and make sure that people know about these things, not just the twice annual drug takebacks or only going to the police station or the courthouse. There will actually be kits that they're giving away at the health fair that you can use to dispose of your medication. So you can take those home, grab a couple of them, hold on to them, and then dispose of medications as you are done with them.
So there's another alternative,
mm-hmm.
besides just bringing it. You can go pick something up, take it home, and do it right in your home.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. And again, we rely on you folks to give us all of that information, and you are going to be busy once again by getting all of the word out about all of your different programs.
Yeah.
I'm assuming we'll see you back out at the at Public Square.
Yes, we will be back out at Public Square. We did upgrade that a little, I guess we'll say. We had a lot more music this year. Some different farmers that came out. Polka Day was our most popular day.
I bet.
So we're trying to think about how we can improve upon that as well. We're thinking about maybe going into senior centers and working with them. And doing lots of maybe like pop-up community activities, I guess I would call them, because they're not going to be large scale, but just going to where people are so they don't have to come to us.
And if anybody has any suggestions, please, comments, concerns, anything like that, how would they get in touch with you?
They can either call the office. That number is 570-344-3616, or they can email me at info@Luz, L-U-Z, LAC, L-A-C-K, MED, M-E-D, SOC, S-O-C, .org.
And once again, give us the rundown for the 19th of October.
Yes.
Boo! Yes. I just like doing that.
It is our first annual 5K and health fair, October 19th. Registration is $25 per runner. The run will begin at 9. The health fair starts at 9:30. And you can sign up at runsignup.com. Search Boo Run 5K and health fair.
And the health fair is free.
The health fair is free.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Once again, a reminder, the Medical Society's premier 5K run walk and health fair is Saturday, October 19th at Wilkes University. The Halloween-themed event offers fun for the whole family. And if you'd like to find out more information, you can always get in touch with them at info@luzlacmedsoc.org. Now it's that time of the year. The leaves are changing. It's starting to get a little bit chilly. And of course, the signs are going up for flu shots. Dawn Webster, physician's assistant with MedExpress in Pittsburgh, has the lowdown on why it's a good idea to get them early. Dawn, it's that time of the year again. Can you believe it? It's summer's over and the flu season has begun. What can you tell us?
Well, we haven't seen too much of the flu yet, but it definitely is starting already.
We're hearing again that, you know, you need to get your flu shot. You should get your flu shot early. A lot of people are saying, well, you know, it's probably the same as last year, so I already know what to expect. Is that true?
No. So every year the flu changes and it mutates and, you know, it's different. So it really is important to get the flu shot every year.
When you say it mutates, how does that happen? Does it matter what part of the country you're in? Does it matter where you might catch the flu and then take it to another part of the area? How does all that work?
Yeah, I think that that has a lot to do with it. So, you know, unfortunately, viruses, bacteria, they change, which is also how bacteria can become resistant to antibiotics. So every year they have to create a new flu vaccine based on their guesses, essentially, what they think is going to happen, what they think is going to emerge, what viruses, what strains.
I've seen reports that a lot of times in our country, we'll take the cues from what has already happened in other parts of the world that have already gone through their fall, winter season and are now coming into summer. Is that also play a part in it as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, like, right now, it's Australia's winter season. I mean, they're in their peak flu season. So we can use their data to help us kind of figure out how to better prepare for this flu season.
When we're looking at the flu shots, now again, the signs are going up at a lot of pharmacies. They're going up. A lot of healthcare providers are saying, you know, now is the time to get your flu shot. What can someone expect? Because again, we've heard the stories, and I'm sure you have too. I felt fine until I got the flu shot. Myth or not?
Sure. Well, I mean, unfortunately, you can feel achy after getting the flu shot, but it's not because you're getting the flu. So the virus that they're putting inside of you with the flu shot is either an inactivated virus or it's not a virus at all. It's particles. It's like a product, a byproduct. So essentially, the achiness, the sickness you're feeling is your immune system fighting off what they did put in you. So it's just letting you know that your body is working to fight it. And, you know, it's normally just a couple days, and some people don't have that at all. But if you do, it's essentially just your body kind of fighting off what it thinks is an illness.
One of the other things that we're also seeing along with the flu shot available signs are over 65, there's a more potent flu shot. Is that correct?
It's not that it's more potent. It's just there's more viruses that it's protecting you against. So, you know, there's multiple different versions, but a lot of times the one that they recommend for people over the age of 65 is called a quad. There's four different flu viruses they're protecting you against.
And when we're talking about things along that line, is it something that is one size fits all, or should you talk with your physician first to see that there might be, as here, you know, you're over 65, you might want to ask for this particular shot, or do they know when you go into different places, oh, I'm going to get this today, I'm just going to go in there, and they'll already know exactly what you need?
Sure. So a lot of times it is based on just your general age, but if you are younger than 65 and you have a comorbidity like asthma or COPD or diabetes, then you may want to check with your family doctor because they may recommend you get a different one. And the same with women that are pregnant. A lot of times they recommend the preservative-free vaccine for them.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the other things as well, because again, the signs are out there, and now we're not only seeing flu shots, but also seeing the pneumonia shot. Now, is that something that, again, you should consult with your physician first, and what exactly, how does that compare to a flu shot?
Sure. So there's multiple forms of pneumonia. You can get a bacterial pneumonia, a viral pneumonia, I mean, some people can get both at the same time, unfortunately. But yes, the pneumonia shot helps protect the people that are older or also that are immunocompromised from getting pneumonia. They typically don't recommend it for young, healthy individuals because it's not as much of a risk. You know, you can easily, if it's a viral pneumonia, fight it off, you know, just by resting and taking care of yourself. But if you're older or immunocompromised, then you should get it to help protect yourself from even being in that situation.
And is it true that the pneumonia shot is also in two stages?
Yes. Yep. And then it also will last a couple years. So it's not something you have to get every year like the flu vaccine.
So again, that's something that you'd be able to talk about with either with your pharmacist or your physician, and then be able to get the information there. Now, the other thing that we're also seeing a lot of is shingles.
For the shingles vaccine, you mean?
Yes.
Yes. Yep. And they're also always coming out with new formulations that, you know, may be updated with the different virus, you know, strains that they're seeing. So a little bit more effective in terms of what we're seeing right now.
And is that, again, something that, because I know there are some of us who never had chicken pox as kids, so does that mean that we can just ignore this whole situation, or is there something that we, too, need to be prepared for?
Sure. So if you've never had chicken pox, you should get the chicken pox vaccine, if you haven't already.
And what is that? Does that give you chicken pox?
No, it'll just protect you from getting it. Because if you have never had it and you do get it as an adult, it is typically significantly worse than having it as a child. So yeah, definitely if you have not had the chickenpox and you're an adult, you should get the chickenpox vaccine.
A lot of times, you know, you have people that sit down and they talk about all these things and they say, well, I've got this one and I got that one. So maybe from your perspective, is it a good idea to rely on other people and say, well, if everybody else around me has already taken care of this, then I think I'm pretty safe?
Well, I know what you mean. That's called herd immunity. And essentially, you're, you know, kind of gambling, to be honest, because the more people that feel that way, obviously, the more of a risk you have. And it also, I mean, if you have no reason to not get the vaccine, then you're just kind of putting yourself at more risk. So, I mean, it's definitely something you can talk about with your doctor, but for the most part, it's typically not recommended.
So I guess the bottom line here is early is probably better. And again, when we're talking about this, we know in the past that there have been times when it's the height of the season and you're hearing, well, there are no more flu shot vaccines available, or they have to be ordered. So if you get it too late, you run into that. But if you get it too early, is it possible that they'll come out with something else?
Not typically. Typically, once it gets released for the season, even if they get ordered later in the season, they're going to be the same one.
So probably a good idea to get it one and done, and then you don't have to worry about it. Dawn, anything that you would like to add, especially since we're talking about getting prepared for the cold and flu season? Oh, I know what I wanted to ask you. There was a report not too long ago that they're coming up with a cure for the common cold. Have you heard about that?
You know, I did read a little bit about it, but the article I read was very, very vague. So what it sounds like is they may be, you know, getting closer to figuring out how to inactivate these viruses once they're in your body. But I don't think it's going to be happening anytime soon, unfortunately.
So then what do we do?
Well, so the best thing to do is definitely get your flu shot, and keep in mind that it does take about 2 weeks to completely, you know, start protecting you. So really any time would be good to get it in the near future. And then also, if you do feel like you're getting sick, you know, try to stay home. Try not to spread the germs. If you are anywhere in public, make sure you wash your hands once you do get home. Try not to touch your nose, your mouth, your eyes, because that is one of the ways that these germs spread. And really, it's just, you know, just the general, you know, sneezing in a tissue or your elbow and washing your hands as much as you can.
As Dawn said, now's a good time to start planning on or even getting your flu shot. The City of Wilkes-Barre Health Department will be hosting free flu vaccine clinics for city residents beginning October 4th. They'll be holding drive-through clinics at the Kirby Health Center both Friday and Saturday, October 4th and 5th, on Friday from 5 to 7 p.m. and on Saturday from 9 a.m. until noon. Then they'll also have flu clinics at the Kirby Health Center on North Franklin Street beginning Monday, October 7th, and at various locations throughout the city through Thursday, October 17th. Don't go away. More Special Edition to come.
How do you give hope to a child in the foster care system? It starts with your heart. That tug you feel in yours when you hear that children are waiting for a stable, loving voice to speak up for their best interests. And then it becomes your time. What started out as a feeling that maybe you could make a difference becomes the difference. Change a child's story. There is a child waiting for a volunteer like you.
Learn how you can help at LackawannaCountyCASA.org.
Is someone you love abusing opioid medications? It may not be easy to tell, especially in the early stages of addiction. Perhaps you've noticed changes in your loved one's moods or behavior. People who are addicted to opioids may still hold down jobs and other responsibilities, maintaining the appearance of stability at work and home. Recovery starts with a call. Call 1-800-662-HELP or visit battlingopioids.org.
Welcome back to Special Edition. In this segment, we're going to meet Scott Spencer. He is the Associate Director, Advocacy and Influence of the Annie E. Casey Foundation. What he's going to tell us is about concentrated poverty in Pennsylvania. In this day and age, something that may be a little bit hard to believe, but does continue.
12% of children in the Commonwealth live in concentrated poverty. Scott is going to tell us more about the foundation and what we can do to help.
The NEKC Foundation is a national philanthropy that works to improve life circumstances and conditions for kids, families, and communities across the United States.
And as far as the kids count shows, there is poverty in Pennsylvania. I think a lot of times we might not think about that. How does that go with what your foundation hopes to deal with?
Well, the fact of the matter is that there is poverty everywhere in the United States, and Pennsylvania being no exception, and actually communities across any state are no exception. It doesn't matter whether it's urban, rural, or suburban. And what we really want to point out here is, you know, while the numbers overall are pretty impressive in terms of the movement that has been made, that we shouldn't be satisfied with the fact that in the United States, 8.5 million kids live in poverty. In the state of Pennsylvania alone, over 320,000 kids live in poverty. And there are a range of solutions, whether it is at the state, federal, or local level, that we can do to start to address that. So the kids actually have a really good opportunity to succeed.
It almost seems unbelievable that Pennsylvania, one of 10 states that actually saw an increase? How is that possible?
Well, you know, there are lots of things that, that can contribute to, you know, the changes in circumstances. It could be that with the expanding economy that families have, you know, families who had the opportunity to move, relocate, moved out of communities. It could be the loss of jobs and industries in certain pockets of the communities. There are myriad factors that could be at play here. But the fact of the matter is we shouldn't be satisfied with the fact that these conditions exist for our kids anywhere.
And I guess one of the things that many people that are listening are thinking, well, it doesn't seem evident as though you're traveling in a third world country. I mean, you don't, it's, I guess it's because a lot of people don't see it on the outside, but it could be happening on the inside, and we don't know what goes on behind closed doors.
That is exactly correct. I mean, in certain places, it may be more visible or more apparent because it represents itself physically. But as you said, I mean, in places where there's maybe concentrated suburban poverty, it is hidden behind closed doors. But the kids and their families feel it every day in every way, whether it is them making choices about whether to have heat or to have food. Those are the types of things that we should not be satisfied with for any kid in the United States.
So what can we do? I mean, it sounds like a daunting task, Scott, that we can do anything in great numbers, but is there anything that we can do in order to start to eradicate this?
I think hopefully the snapshot really points out, you know, one is that it does exist, and we're aware of its existence, and that collectively we should not be satisfied with this for any kid in the United States. But there are things that can happen at the state, local, and federal levels to help to alleviate poverty, whether it is trying to create opportunities for safe, decent, and affordable housing, ending discrimination on source of income for people living in housing, so that people can actually have a choice of living in neighborhoods throughout any community, whether it is concentrating job opportunities and job training opportunities in neighborhoods of concentrated poverty, so that those jobs that people get trained for actually pay sustaining wages that can actually help to lift people out of poverty. You know, creating safe places for kids to play. You know, those are the things that actually can make a difference, both quantitatively and qualitatively for kids and families.
When you're looking at the statistics, what age groups are you looking at? Children from birth, or is it once children get into school age years that this is easier to be tracked because you can obviously see what's going on in a classroom?
Well, we count all kids, and so, you know, kids from birth to 18 would be, you know, one of the focuses, but you also understand that as kids get older, the situations that they face in their poverty also change. I mean, where it becomes more visible for kids in high school, there are other things that may complicate their lives, whether it's their, you know, the peers knowing and the sort of the stigma that goes along with it, whether it is kids going to school hungry and not being able to learn. You know, it doesn't matter what age you are, those circumstances actually really have an impact on a child's well-being and their ability to succeed.
And it's not just necessarily whether children are getting the proper nutrients, but then again, you have other things to consider as well, such as health care and even the ability to go to school. That may also have something to do with all of what we're looking at as an overall of poverty. So I don't want to give anybody the wrong impression that we're just looking at it from a lack of food point of view. There can be other things that go into it, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it, like I said, quality housing, affordability of housing, safe access to anything in your community, whether it is going to school or whether it is just being able to go outside and play. And as you mentioned, healthcare is a major component. Or for their parents who are trying to get to work, how they get to work. Do they have access? Is there a job in their community that is paying a living wage? And if not, do they have access to the transportation to be able to get them to those places of employment so they actually can actually lift their family out of poverty?
And that's sometimes tough depending, again, on the area that you're in, because if you're center city, it's one thing, but if you live in a rural area, that can also play a big role as well.
Absolutely. And the same thing can happen in suburban communities as well.
What would you like to leave with our listeners, Scott, as far as the kids count, as far as your foundation and everything all at once that either we can do, we can change, or at least be aware of?
Well, I would invite people to look at our website, www.aecf.org. Where there is a lot of information on things that people can do to improve the conditions for kids and families in the United States. Secondly, I would urge you to look at what's going on in your local community and to think about how you might use this information to inform your elected officials on things that they can do or how your employer can actually think about ways to create greater opportunities for families to be able to get employment, to be able to find housing, or to be able to access the opportunities in the United States.
Thanks again to Scott Spencer for joining us. Scott is with Annie E. Casey Foundation. More than 100 years ago, Annie E. Casey was a widow raising her four children near Seattle. Her sacrifice and struggles deeply affected her eldest son, Jim, who dedicated his life to creating an enduring legacy of service to children and families in America. If you would like to learn more or contact them, you can go to their website, which is aecf.org.
Thanks for listening to Special Edition, a weekly look at the issues in the news and the personalities shaping the stories, a production of Intercom Communications.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.